This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutan, and with me is Tan Chung Han. It was a wild Wednesday for US stocks as markets reacted to heightened concerns over a trade war between the world's two largest economies, with both the US and China laying out plans within hours of each other to impose tariffs on $50 billion US dollars worth of imports, headed either way. On the line is Vishnu Varadhan, head of economics and strategy at Mizuho Bank in Singapore. Over to you, Han.
Good morning, Vishnu. So given the tariff threats between the US and China, look, various commentators have said that they would like to believe that calmer heads will prevail. But given what's already transpired, do you think that belief, that notion that calmer heads will still prevail, will that belief still hold?
Well, I think there is a good chance it will. And there are two reasons to believe that. I mean, the first is neither side has actually erected these tariffs yet. For the US, they've got a consultation process starting somewhere in the middle of May, and it's got till late May to end up with the with the comments from businesses who are against these tariffs. And that is the hope that, you know, that kind of timeline to cool off is encouraging. And similarly, Beijing is very clear that they find tariffs undesirable, but it's a necessary reciprocal response. So it's contingent on U.S. making the first move. So that's the first consolation and the first hope. The second one is that both sides have quite openly said that they've left the door open to dialogue. And very encouragingly, even U.S. trade hawk Wilbur Ross has suggested that there is an avenue for negotiated solutions. So it looks like neither party really wants to engage. Of course, the pessimists would fear that the retaliatory aspects of tit-for-tat means that we could actually cascade into a trade war. The optimists will see the reciprocity of the tariffs, meaning that there would be strong incentive for them to find a common ground and avert trade wars. But really, the realists will realize that the political incentives on both sides are for negotiated solutions, particularly given that China tariffs are targeted squarely at Trump's strong support base. If they get the farm sector, Trump could lose his support base, and so very strong incentive for negotiated solutions.
Now, Vishnu, at this point in time, do you think the U.S. or China, which one of them have the upper hand right now?
I think both sides are playing a little bit with hands tied. But what we can say is that certainly the U.S. has, or at least had, overestimated the strength of its hand. I mean, we did have Trump very famously saying it's easy to win a trade war because he simplistically and one-dimensionally believed that a trade war was about deficit trade partner holding the surplus country at ransom. But clearly this is about market dominance and dependence. So as an example, U.S. soy exports to China, you know, the majority of it goes to China. So in terms of dependence, yes, China has dependence, but they've got other avenues like Brazil and so on. Whereas the U.S. is now very dependent on China's demand. So China has got a lot of leverage there. And equally, the other side of it is that, you know, China needs to get its goods to the U.S. as well. But we bear in mind that tariffs on either side, all it does is it drives up business and consumer costs on both ends. So the upper hand argument, I think, would be fleeting and hollow.
Now, Vishnu, it's important that you highlight that, you know, tariffs drive up business costs, right? So give us an economics 101 lesson here. I mean, is there anything inherently wrong with the trade deficit beyond, you know, like you mentioned, driving up those business costs? I guess I'm trying to get to the rationale as to why Trump is so insistent on reducing that trade deficit with China.
I mean, that's a very good question, and I think, you know, many of us will still be scratching our heads and be quite unsure of this. But one way to look at it is that, you know, the trade deficit is a manifestation of what economists define as a savings investment gap. To put it very simply, I mean, the trade deficit accrues because the deficit country has got consumers who are saving less and spending more, and as a result, they actually start to import more. So it really goes back to the propensity to save. And that, in turn, is defined by productivity as well. So if a country is more productive, then they get further returns. And it makes sense for them to invest more and hence save more. So I think the U.S. should really target productivity and looking at industries rather than looking at the manifestation of that, which is the trade deficit.
Got it. Now, zooming out to the global stage, how much could this trade war derail the Goldilocks scenario that we have got right now in terms of global growth?
Like Goldilocks already has left the building. We are left with quite a few bears around, though. So we're really looking at the first bears, of course, is trade war bear. I mean, there's a lot of political, tugging going on behind the scenes as well. And then you've got U.S. midterm elections. So that suggests that at the end of the day, with markets already, looking very rich, this Goldilocks scenario may be threatened by growth that's starting to peak, a trade upcycle that's looking to mature prematurely because of these trade tensions. And also we bear in mind that, in the middle of the year, you get into a situation where central banks are withdrawing liquidity from the system. So Goldilocks is going to be very threatened because growth may start to peak or slow, and inflation might start nudging higher, partly due to tariff threats. I mean, people sometimes respond to threats rather than the implementation.
So if Goldilocks has left the building, Vishnu, then, will investors even pay attention to, say, good old economic fundamentals? For example, we've got U.S. non-farm payrolls that's due out later tomorrow evening, our time. So will markets even bother with that?
I think you framed the answer for me as a question. So it looks like markets will pay less attention to it. I mean, there are two reasons. First, we do have these headline and much greater risks of trade war, so on and so forth, like you pointed out. With all these risks, are we going to pay attention to a data point? The other reason is the Fed has, by and large, already taken it that the labor market is on a very strong footing, and they have got some hawkish inclination. So the surprise here may be if, data come up exceptionally strong, which is unlikely. So there's a wide berth around the data, so markets won't watch this too much. Instead, I think they may watch the wage numbers. That may still have a little bit of an impact because that's going to feed into inflation, which has been the one that the Fed has been paying more attention to. But given that the Fed also recently alluded to uncertainty around trade, I think markets' reactions will still be somewhat reined in and perhaps not too lasting either.
So, Vishnu, going back to this, the prospects of a trade war then, if it materializes, how exposed is Asia to the fallout and, I guess, for Malaysia in particular?
Well, we were taking a look at this. It's quite difficult to actually drill down into this at the moment, given that we don't know exactly where the trade linkages are going to end up. But one thing we can say is that the kind of tariffs that the U.S. is positioning against China would end up affecting perhaps countries around China to a greater extent as well, because they are targeting high-tech and capital transport goods. We see a lot more feedback and adverse effects knocking onto countries like Japan, Korea, and Taiwan. And we bear in mind that these countries, producers of these goods, have got a lot of supply chain in ASEAN as well. So the big countries that could get hit potentially could be countries like Thailand, to some extent, Malaysia as well, where electronics and some of the machinery are concerned. But Malaysia has got, within the region, Malaysia probably has got the best buffer in terms of oil and a slightly more diverse manufacturing sector.
Thank you so much for your time and your insights. That was Vishnu Varadhan, Head of Economics and Strategy with Mizuho Bank in Singapore.
We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.